Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery have given me these Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. They've been very popular, maybe because they're bright yellow, like the jacket of that kid that the Bills drafted who gave the funny press conference over the weekend. The NFL draft is in the books. The Orioles season is very much in the cooking at this point. We have discussed at length Craig Kimbrell. We've discussed at length the bullpen situation. Feels like we've been discussing for 3 months the deep depth of the organization, how good they are, playing 650 ball on this clip for a long, long time now, and they're on pace to win 102 games. But the one thing we haven't talked about that we haven't really experienced is a big series. The New York Yankees come to town. It is 85 degrees in the Charm City. Luke Jones has his golf shirt on. He looks marvelous. After a long weekend of baseball, losing baseball, tough losses in baseball, up all day, all night with drafts, which were more chalk, I would say, offensive line aside. But the Yankees are in town, Luke. A big series. And questions about the bullpen. And by the way, these guys hit the ball. I mean, lost in over the weekend in losses in one-run games and blown saves and Craig Kimbrell. It's just, these guys really hit the ball. My friends at the lottery know they're giving out these home run riches grand slams, you know?
Yeah, and I want to keep throwing out the caveat. It's big for late April. I mean, they've got 5 months to go. But these head-to-heads, especially when you're talking about tiebreakers, it's important. So it's certainly a big series. They played big series last year. This team is used to this at this point in time. I mean, it doesn't get bigger in the regular season than what they did with Tampa mid-September last year in Baltimore. So I think, you know, the Yankees are a team that, you know, in some ways similar to the Orioles, they've hit the ball. They certainly have some questions, you know, with health of pitchers and things of that nature, but they're off to a good start. They have some guys that are really hitting, some other guys who haven't hit. And I think the big difference, and we've kind of talked about this before the season even started, was the Yankees depending on some veteran players, you know, guys that have either been injured, haven't been as productive in recent years, certainly that.
And well compensated. Throw that in there too. Make sure you point that out. Not just veteran, well compensated veterans.
Well, but well compensated doesn't mean anything when you're between the lines and you're playing, right? So
no question about
but
that.
They're off to a good start. And I think for where the Orioles stand right now with some of the questions about the pitching, although as we mentioned in a previous segment, Kyle Bradish, I assume, is going to get the ball on Thursday. John Means tossed 7 shutout innings on Sunday at Norfolk, which, you know, his 30 days is just about up. So that move would have been coming anyway. But, you know, you're going to have some reinforcements here. And then what does that mean for the trickle-down effect with the bullpen? What's going to happen with Craig Kimbrell? We'll find out. But in the meantime, this is a big series. And I think for both these teams, quite frankly, the Orioles and the Yankees, I think they're both probably viewing this as a measuring stick to say, all right, where are we right now as we're going up against the other perceived heavyweight in the AL East? Not to discount the other teams, because it's not as though everyone else is out of it. But it's been the Yankees and the Orioles since the start of the season right there at the top. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out. But certainly with the Orioles, they've hit. The Yankees have hit. And I think the questions are certainly more on the pitching side in terms of how these teams, you know, profile moving forward. Let's put it that way.
Well, if I had my press credential, there's no question I'd go talk to Nestor Cortez. So the other nasty, now I'm going to just give him the title. Now that we've done the 25th anniversary and I've explained all the nasty Nestor stuff, and Vinny Testaverde has come and with a Testaverde testimonial as part of the 25th anniversary, I need to hand the mantle. I want to find an old Get Nasty shirt, present one to Nestor Cortez and say, here, you can have it. But he's quite a story, and I think as much as we talk about the well-compensated this and that, and you already said Mariano Rivera's name in regard to Kimbrell and what you're not getting, and I think back to the glory era, and I have some Derek Jeter pictures. I have some Tino Martinez pictures I left out of the documentary, as well as some Mike Stantons and some Chuck Knoblauchs and some Roger Clemens. from all that era. But when you talk about those players, and I think of Knobloch as a Twin and Clemens as a Red Sox and Paul O'Neill as a Red and those names, Bernie Williams, you know, Mariano Rivera, they were homegrown Jeter that sort of started the party for all of that. This version of the Yankees, I don't want to say it reminds me of the mid-'80s Steinbrenner, sort of old and tired and just a whole bunch of Jack Clarks hanging around or whatever. But it's certainly not glory era Yankees. And for the money they've spent, and you talk so much about value and value picks over the weekend and where we're going to spend our money, I don't know. I mean, if you're importing your Juan Sotos and you're importing your Giancarlo Stantons and you're paying those guys, it is a little different than your Jeters and your Ripkins of that era. And certainly the Orioles go into this thing with, all right, you get five guys now that you have. Add Kowser to somebody we got to pay, by the way. Another guy we got to give $200 million to this week. Rubenstein, I ain't met you yet, but I'm spending your money. You know, the Yankees are built a little differently in importing some blood and having some Nestor Cortez rule five. We'll take him back. No, you don't want him. No. Okay. Now they give him t-shirts. Even I want to give him a t-shirt, Luke.
You love Nestor Cortez. Understandably so. And look, he's been a good story.
Listen, you've had a lot of Lukes. Yeah, I mean, you've had Lukes since Skywalker. Not even two.
There haven't been that many Lukes.
No.
It's not the name John.
Luke's a biblical name.
No, it is, but it's not like there are that many Lukes out there. But I agree. It's more popular than Nestor. I will say that.
How many Lukes have you met? There was Luke Perry. All the girls wanted to date a Luke. There's the Luke Bryan, the country bumpkin. There's Lukes everywhere. Luke
Scott. I don't
know
if I'd say everywhere. Well, okay, Luke Scott. That was over a decade ago at this point.
Name two Nestors, not name Cortez or Aparicio. And I'm going to Regis Philbin you on that. I'll give you 10 seconds. I'll let you call your sister if you want. Name another Nestor. Go ahead.
Nestor the donkey, right? The Christmas
long-eared Christmas donkey, correct? Keep going. That's not even.
Are we going to talk about baseball? Are we going to talk about names and stuff like that?
I'll give you a couple. Nestor Torres is an accomplished flautist. I met him on an Air Jamaica flight one time. He told me he had never met another Nestor. I met Nestor Shylock when I was a boy. A Hall of Fame type of umpire, had a great reputation. Mm-hmm. Even Earl Weaver probably said good things about Nestor Shylock, which probably gave Earl an inside track on me. By the way, John Eisenberg on this week talking about the other Earl Weaver. And then there's Nestor Kirchner, who was the longtime president of Argentina, who died. His wife kind of took over because that's the way their politics worked there. We didn't vote for Hillary here, but that's sort of the way it worked there. And so if you Google Nestor, the number one Nestor that shows up is not the Greek god of wisdom. It's probably Nestor Cortez if you're anywhere near Yankees. But Nestor Kirchner, there are these great images with the Argentinian baby blue flag, like the Houston Oilers blue. And it says Nestor Vive, V-I-V-E with it. And that means Nestor lives. So I just... Nestor Cortez is going to pitch, so I'm just throwing that out at you, and you know, have at it, Nestor Torres. Well, I say Cortez, I meant Torres, but go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have much.
Confusing Mike Torres.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add on Nestor Cortez. I mean, we've talked about him, but I think, you know, for the point you were making, yeah, I mean, obviously the payroll, and obviously Juan Soto has been fantastic for them, but let's also not overlook what Anthony Volpe's done for them. I mean, who has arguably been right there with Soto as their most valuable player a month into the season, but he's still really important, and he's a homegrown guy, so you still need that. That's why I've said, you know, looking at this through a big picture lens and what's going to happen with Rubenstein and the payroll and who they're going to pay, who they're going to, you know, who's not going to be paid, who's going to be traded, all of that, you're still going to need your organization to produce young, cheap, controllable talent. And a lot of that is because the youngest players are the best players. You know, for the longest time, there was a perception that the prime of a Major League Baseball player's career was like age 27 through 30. And the statistics just don't support that anymore. I mean, I'm not saying that it's 20 And Jackson Holliday was a good example of someone who wasn't quite ready. But, you know, a big part of why the economic system in baseball is so off, for lack of a better term, is these guys that are the very best players in baseball and some of the best talents in baseball are under club control for such a long period of time. They're under club control for their prime years. And so that's why, you know, you see the free agent movement or lack thereof. And, you know, a big reason why is some of those most lucrative talents, you know, they're already past their prime by the time they get to free agency, depending on when they were brought up.
Have you ever seen any of those Boris plans from 15 years ago where he would come in with the slide presentation and a binder full of statistical stuff about the next 10 years of Alex Rodriguez's career or the next 8 years of his pitcher if his arm doesn't fall off and he has Tommy John surgery? Now the statistics come the other way. And listen, I'm not going to sit here after having Maury Brown on last week, after having Susan Fornoff on talking about having a rat delivered to her door, and, you know, all the history of baseball in regard to ownership and the Players Association and money. But this is where they can brainwash you, and Elias can brainwash the fans and make a case that we shouldn't sign any of these guys to $300 million over 10 years and their agents being unreasonable. And I'm fine to buy in for 6 years or 7 years or whatever the industry thing is. But this would also, backing up a month or two ago, when there were some really serious players out in the marketplace trying to get deals. And again, I do not want to cry for Mr. Rubenstein, who I have not met, or Mr. Angelos, who has left us, in regard to ownership and how the lords of the realm have operated for all of these years. But you've made a hell of a case, a baseball case, that signing any of these guys for $50 million a year when they're 30, 31, 32, especially pitchers, is a different gig. And the owners and the baseball people and the nerds and the statistical, blah, 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 they held the line a little bit this year. I don't want to say that's good for the game or good for your wallet or it's going to change how much the beers they're going to charge me once Mr. Rubenstein does give me my press credential and I come out there and I buy a beer, that it's going to change any of that. But it does change the psychology of all of this, right? Like when the best players hit the market and can't get signed, when there used to be crazy-ass money and justification on the agent side and holdouts and all of that. I don't know where Rutschman, Kowser, Holliday, Henderson, like all of the Westberg, throw him in there. He'll get a lot of money if he's that kind of player. A lot of money might only mean $120 million, not $250 million. But we are a small market until otherwise proven. Nice crowd out there over the weekend, too. They brought the kids out on Sunday. That was lovely. But the revenue and where all this goes, that's the difference. I was in New York all day Saturday. You know what I saw all day Saturday? Luke, you're going to love this. I walked 20 miles in New York. Beautiful day, flat. I saw Rangers everything. I saw Knicks stuff in lots of places. I didn't see a whole lot of Yankees or Mets. It was all rangered up, beating up on the Capitals. This is my cheap shot at you, Ted Leones. Just take another seat. But in the case of the Yankees, they're always going to have more money and what they do with it. But, man, when the Orioles finally feels like they have a flexibility and all of this stuff, you know, here come these cases as every team comes in and out. And we already talked about Josh Hader and what do you want to do in the bullpen and where do you want to spend your money? There's a hell of a case being made that spending money, the long-term money's, you know, we all want to give Gunner this and we all want to give Adley that and all of that. And then you wind up with Chris Davis or whatever. And you hope that's never the case. But you also would think that they have to be smarter. And I'll give Rubenstein the benefit of the doubt because he had nothing to do with Charlie Finley or George Steinbrenner or any of that. He's new to the party in a lot of ways, but the game's changed a lot, and the way Mike Elias, if he's going to be the sheriff here the next 10 years, like DaCosta is up the street where he makes long-term decisions, this is a case study watching the Yankees and how they're trying to do it and how they could at any point buy any of our guys if they wanted to.
I mean, they could. I mean, look, I've said all along, it's not about spending money, it's about spending money wisely. And I think there are certainly players who warrant those kinds of contracts. They absolutely do. Gunnar Henderson is one of them. Gunnar Henderson's 22 years old and is very much looking more and more like he could win MVP of the league. I mean, that's what kind of player we're seeing in his second full year in the majors. He's the kind of player where it makes perfect sense to do that. He's 22, and look, is there any chance of them extending him before he gets to market? I mean,
Can you give me an
Scott Boras
example
guy,
of what you would expect? And
but
what you would expect is he's a Boris guy, and that never happens, right? That's what you're
typically doesn't.
here to
I
tell
mean,
me,
it's
right?
yeah, I mean, that's usually not the case,
And it would
but
have
the
to be
point.
an industry. Mr. Rubenstein and Mr. Elias would have to lead the industry in giving that kind of contract to make Boris stand up and say, "Take it, 22-year-old young man." It would be sort of monumental, would it not be, if that were to happen?
I mean, if you're going to give them a 15-year contract or something like that, that would be monumental. I mean, when you're talking about someone of his ilk at his age, still years away from free agency, still a little bit away from even arbitration, it is a little bit different.
If it
You know,
was
you do
10
try.
years, 400 million,
I
changes your
mean,
life right now, makes you an Oriole, I don't think Boris takes that deal. And I just threw a lot of numbers at you, but I just
yeah.
said I and that's just a flat out 400 million, and right now your whole get just come and play baseball and be the best baseball player you can be and work the rest of it out later. I mean, for whatever Mahomes' deal was and how in the football side, after he won in the beginning, and Lee Steinberg massaged it to make it sound like this or that, all of a sudden Lamar's making more. They're 3 years later, they're all chasing it. Baseball, typically, you don't start ripping contracts up 5 years in. You know what I mean? Either way, and it is interesting. We talk about money with both of these sports because the money is so weirdly different in how it's allocated and salary cap. I mean, it's apples and vegetables is what it is. How the
It
players
is.
play.
I mean, that's why I'm saying. I mean, the NFL, like, I'm not even bringing it up because it's completely different. I mean, even for quarterbacks, other than Deshaun Watson, I mean, the Deshaun Watson contract's the only thing that's comparable because these deals are all fully guaranteed. And oh, yeah, they have opt-outs for the player. So even if you sign Gunnar Henderson to, I don't want to belabor the point because it's just a hypothetical anyway, but even if you sign him to the deal that you just threw out there as far as the hypothetical numbers, it would probably have opt-outs after 3 years, 5 years, what? So, but that's always player driven, right? It's not like in the NFL, it's the opposite, right? The opt-outs are for the team, basically.
Yeah,
Basically,
if he
these
had
deals are.
75 home runs in year four, he's the Yankees are saying we'll give you 85 million, whatever it is. I mean, the soccer players get all that kind of money. I mean, the numbers must boggle Cal Ripken's mind. I remember he was just trying to get 6 million a year.
But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, I completely disagree with you that now they have five or six guys to extend. No, I mean, Jordan Westberg's under club control for five. We don't, Trey Mancini, 2 or 3 years into his career, looked like a guy you wanted to extend. And then we saw how that played out. So most of these guys, you just look, you play it out. You're going to get really good production compared to what they're going to get. And obviously, arbitration shifts the dynamic a little bit, but not completely. But you're just in a position as an organization that has done so well from a player development standpoint. You've drafted so well. Obviously, it needs to continue knowing you're not going to be picking in the top five with regularity anymore. Hopefully that's the case for a long time now. But you're in a position where, yeah, you have new ownership and yeah, you hope to have some financial flexibility, but it's not going to be a blank check interminably where just indefinitely where you just sign guys left and right. You're going to have to be judicious with who you sign. I mean, I'll tell you right now, Nestor, and this is the more relevant point. We spend so much time talking about Adley and Gunnar and Jackson Holliday, all the young guys who are still years away from free agency. Let's talk about Corbin Burnes. I mean, what he's going to get on the market, I'll be honest with you. I'm not enthused about doing that because go look at the biggest contracts in baseball right now. that are out there for pitchers, and how many of those guys are hurt or have been hurt during that contract? And I really question whether it's a great investment. I really do. So now the problem, and that's where the Orioles here need to start catching up, and I think they're starting to make some hay in this way, but we know that most of their player development and drafting has been focused on the bat size. But I would be much more of the thought that I need to develop my own pitchers, or I'm going to trade position talent that I have in excess, in surplus, to go get Corbin Burns, or, you know, why they were trying to get Dylan Cease a year ago. I think that would be the way I'd try to play it, more so than saying, well, I know these lucrative long-term pitcher contracts usually don't work out very well, but my guy's going to be different, right? I mean, that's
well, there's always going to be good pitchers on bad teams in contract years that they don't want to pay. So, you know, you don't want to make your hay on that, but I would agree with you. There is this plethora of position talent, but on the pitching side, we don't hear so much about that. And that should be disturbing for 25 and 26 and 27 when, you know, they hit the ball, man. They're going to be a good baseball team the next couple of years on the field, and they're going to field the ball. They're going to catch the ball. They're going to hit the ball. You know, where the rest of the division really is with Tampa and Boston and Toronto, they're going to be okay, but who's going to pitch? And we've started that on the bullpen at the beginning of the week. And we'll be talking about that 3 weeks from now. If everything's fixed and they have four starters at the top of the rotation and Dean Kramer turns out to be the fifth guy, and we go back to that January pipe dream.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe Cano settles in as a closer. He's a better closer when you're up 7-2 in the ninth inning than when it's 4-3 and it's 92 degrees and Jim Palmer's complaining about the strike zone and the ball getting up in the air.
Yeah. Wow. We didn't even talk. I mean, the ball was flying on Sunday. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, look, I mean, it's all related. I mean, it's all part of the puzzle. And I mean, you know, again, just to finish up the thought on starting pitching and whether you pay for it and all that. I mean, I am not at all implying that I would never sign a starting pitcher. I mean, that would be ludicrous. But at the same time, when you're looking at pitchers, you know, who are 30, or especially guys on the wrong side of 30. Now, Corbin Burns is 29. You know, what is he going to command on the open market? I don't think he's going to give the Orioles a hometown discount. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I doubt it. So
well, this is his chance to go get paid. Like,
right? Exactly. Yeah. And he should. Now that said, does that mean the Orioles should give him whatever he wants? That's where I look at this and say, I'm not sure about that. So
well, part of that is how you can pitch in October, young man.
Well, sure. That's part of it. And also part of that is, where's Grayson Rodriguez at that point? Where's Kyle Bradish? You know, where's Dean Kramer? You know, they have guys like Cade Povich at AAA who are getting closer, you know? So it's not as though the cupboard's bare, but yeah, I mean, Corbin Burns, it's very tempting. I'm not saying I'm a 100% no on extending him, but we're seeing it around baseball over and over and over now. These guys break, regardless of age, wear and tear. They break. They break at every level, at every age, at every kind of every circumstance. So is that something that you want to invest in long term? That's the big question. But to bring it back full circle, Corbin Burns is here for the rest of the year. The Orioles are hitting the ball. They have all these young players. The Yankees are coming into town. The Yankees have some young players, but a lot of veteran players that are making a lot of money, some of them making too much money for what their value is in terms of whether it's a good value or not, but we'll see how this plays out. You know, to your point, it's a big series, as I said, with a caveat, a big series for late April, early May, a lot of baseball to go. But I think with the way the Yankees have been swinging the bats, I think, you know, buckle up from a pitching standpoint, especially with the bullpen. If, you know, Kimbrel, whether he's going to be on the shelf or not, you know, certainly struggling, and, you know, we'll see how this holds up. And as I said in a previous segment, you know, if I'm Mike Elias, I need to be looking right now for bullpen help. I need to be looking for that. I'm not panicking and making a dumb move just for the sake of doing it. But at the same time, you know, this might not be something that you can wait until June or July to do. Let's put it that way.
I'll be watching Nasty Nestor pitch from here. Maybe I'll breakout my Get Nasty shirt to honor him this week as he comes back to the original of Camden Yards, where I think his ERA was infinity when we let him go. But God bless him. He's back. So we had a beautiful conversation about Nestor's past, present, and future. And now you have me Googling Nestor, the long-eared Christmas donkey, to see if there was a part two. I am Nestor. He is Luke. You can find us at Baltimore Positive. You can find us also at Fadley's, doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions. That's clean water, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi-Care. Lots of things going on around here this week. Certainly, Kentucky Derby is happening. We're doing some horse racing conversation about past, present, and future. And, man, I had a heck of an education last week up at Greenmount Bowl of David Richardson and Alan Foreman on everything about horse racing. And, you know, there were some roots in the 25th anniversary documentary where Clem Florio shows up in the documentary, even in the video with John Buren. And my roots go back to doing this 32 years ago and Clem being my original racing insider, but a guy I knew from the track and certainly a guy who was a guy that makes me think about this time of the year when I see Clem Florio. So, oh, you baby doll. So it is, it's a big horse racing week. You'll hear from, and I'm wearing my state fair, and don't be like John Rollo and go to Timonium looking for state fair. That's where the state fair is held. If you want to go to the state fair where you eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you have to go to Catonsville. Or that's Catonsville for the folks at Masson who don't know how to pronounce it. And we will be we'll be talking some horse racing this week. And I'll certainly be doing that 2 weeks from now when the Preakness comes back. But if you want to know about the future of the Preakness, you want to know about the future of horse racing, they're shutting down Laurel. There's all sorts of stuff I didn't know. Or Laurel, as the ghost of Charlie Ekman would say. Go watch my 25th anniversary documentary, laugh a little bit, send me a note. And certainly, if you have any old VHS tapes or old weird stuff, like where my hair was different back in the era of John Buren, and he called me Eric Estrada, my pal Greg Landry does that work at Towson Transfers. He's also Blue Rock Productions and was the executive co-producer of all things. No one listens and everyone hears. So please go watch it, laugh, throw me a note, and you're probably in it somewhere if I've stumbled upon you anywhere over the last 32 years of doing this. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.